Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So today we're diving deep into a question that has, well, it's puzzled oncologists for decades.
It really has.
Why are men 4 times more likely to be diagnosed with bladder cancer than women?
Exactly. We all know smoking is the big risk factor, the main culprit.
Right.
But that number, that 4-to-1 ratio, it's always felt like there was something more going on biologically. The reason for that disparity has been pretty murky.
And that's because we tend to think of our tissues, like the bladder lining, as just a static surface.
Right, but it's not. It's anything but static. The urothelium is it's a dynamic biological mosaic.
A mosaic, yeah.
It's constantly being repopulated by different groups of cells clones that are all competing for dominance, and that competition is driven by somatic mutations that just, you know, build up over time.
So you're talking about a kind of internal evolutionary battle.
A microscopic Hunger Games happening inside us right now.
Long before any tumor or any visible disease ever shows up.
Precisely. And that leads to the core idea in this deep dive.
What
if these huge risk factors, like being male or smoking, what if they aren't just causing random DNA errors?
You mean they're not just mutagens?
What if they're acting as powerful environmental selectors, actively promoting the growth of specific clones that already carry dangerous mutations? This research gives us just an unprecedented window into that process.
That completely reframes the whole idea of risk. It's not passive damage. It's active selection.
It is.
Before we dig into the mechanisms, we really have to acknowledge the team behind this. The scale of this work is incredible.
Absolutely. This is a monumental leap, both technologically and analytically. So we want to recognize the groundbreaking work of Ferial Calvet, Raquel Blanco Martinez-Alescas, Abel Gonzalez-Perez, Nuria Lopez-Bigas, and Rosa Anna Risks.
They're affiliated with some major institutions, right?
Yeah.
Yes, including the Institute for Research in Biomedicine in Barcelona and the University of Washington. They've really pushed our understanding of how sex and smoking shape this clonal landscape.
So let's ground ourselves in the clinical problem again. We have bladder cancer risk strongly linked to sex and smoking.
But the fog, as you said, has been the mechanism. Is smoking just creating new errors? Is it a mutagen?
Or is it feeding the ones that are already there, acting as a promoter?
And maybe most importantly, why is the male urothelium so much more susceptible to these driver mutations in the first place?
Now, the reason we didn't know is because it was basically impossible to see, right?
Immensely difficult. The scientific hurdle was that these early precancerous clones are just. They're like trying to find a single specific grain of sand in an entire stadium. They exist at these ultra low frequencies.
So traditional sequencing would just miss them. It averages everything out.
Completely misses them. So if conventional methods fail, that's the big question. How did this team map out this entire competitive landscape?
What did they do differently?
They used a technique called ultra-deep duplex DNA sequencing. This is really the heart of the whole study.
Okay.
They collected 79 normal bladder samples from 45 deceased donors. And crucially, they used epithelial brushes to sample pretty large areas, about 2 square centimeters.
And when you say ultra-deep, that feels like an understatement here. What kind of resolution are we talking about?
The numbers are frankly staggering. They got an average depth of about 5,000 reads, so 5,000x per sample.
Wow.
And if you aggregate all that data, they effectively sequenced around 400,000 haploid genomes.
I have to stop you there. 400,000 genomes from normal tissue.
It's that level of accuracy, that duplex sequencing, that lets you confidently spot a mutation that might only exist in one single DNA molecule.
That data scale is just, it's astonishing.
It really is. And they focused on 16 genes they already knew were relevant to bladder cancer, including the big one, the TERT promoter.
And what did they find with this method?
A jaw-dropping number. A total of 64,278 mutations.
64,000.
Yeah. To put that in perspective for you, that is about 16 times more mutations in just this small group of genes than were found across almost 900 actual bladder tumors from a decade of cancer research.
Wow. So they've essentially created a functional map of what's happening in the precancerous environment.
Precisely. And with that volume of data, you can do some really rigorous statistics. They used a sophisticated method, a DNDS approach they called Omega, to quantify positive selection.
Can you break down DNDS for us?
Sure. It's basically a metric that tells you if a genetic change is being favored by evolution, so positive selection.
Or rejected.
Or rejected, negative selection, or if it's just neutral. It let them spot the winners in this clonal race.
Okay, so let's get to those winners. What did this unparalleled depth reveal?
Well, the first big finding was that positive selection is pervasive. It's happening everywhere.
So a lot of these cells were already on a bad path.
A huge number. Mutations in 13 of the 16 genes were actively driving clonal expansion. But they also found some real surprises right away.
What kind of surprises?
They found that certain mutations in the FGFR3 gene, truncating mutations, seem to be under negative selection.
That's counterintuitive, isn't it? FGFR3 is a known cancer driver.
It is. And it suggests that while that mutation might be an advantage later, in a full-blown tumor, in the normal competitive environment of the bladder lining,
it's actually a disadvantage.
It could impose a small cost, slowing its growth. It just shows how the selective pressures can change so radically between healthy and malignant tissue.
And this is so crucial. They found that the overall density of just generic mutations didn't really correlate with smoking.
Not strongly, no. It correlated with age and chemotherapy, but not generally with smoking history. And that really sets the stage for the next big finding.
The sex bias.
Exactly. We know men are 4 times more at risk, and the data provided a powerful biological reason why. Using these really robust regressions, they showed that positive selection on mutations in 3 specific genes.
Which ones?
RBM10, CDKN1A, and ARID1A. The selection for mutations in those genes was significantly increased in the urothelium of men compared to women.
And what do those genes do?
They're all key players. RBM10 and ARID1A are tumor suppressors, and CDKN1A is a regulator, kind of like a brake on the cell cycle.
Breaking them is bad.
Right. And what this shows is that if you cut the brakes in a male bladder cell, that cell gets a much, much stronger advantage to expand than if the exact same mutation happens in a female bladder cell.
So the male environment itself, maybe hormonal or something else, is acting like an incubator.
It's accelerating the growth of these specific mutant clones. It's selection pressure dictated by sex.
And this wasn't just a pattern in normal tissue, was it? It connects to the actual disease.
It connects directly. This bias they found in normal tissue is perfectly reflected in tumors. Bladder cancers in men have a significantly higher rate of these very same mutations in RBM10 and CDKN1A. The advantage starts from day one.
That is a clear biological smoking gun for that sex disparity. Okay, so let's pivot back to tobacco. If smoking isn't just causing random mutations everywhere, what is it doing?
This, I think, is the study's most critical insight. They looked at the activating mutations in the TERT promoter.
Remind us what TERT does.
TERT is the gene that, when it's switched on, it basically makes the cell immortal by maintaining its telomeres. It's a huge step towards cancer.
And where did they find these TERT mutations?
They were very common, but almost exclusively in older donors, so people over 55.
Okay.
But here's the kicker. When they looked just at that older group, the difference was stark. Individuals with a history of smoking had a significantly higher rate of these TERT promoter clones.
So wait, smoking didn't necessarily cause the mutation to happen?
The data strongly suggests it didn't, because smoking wasn't linked to an overall increase in mutation density.
It just caused the cells that already had the mutation to expand.
Exactly. Tobacco carcinogens create the perfect environment for cells that already carry the TERT mutation to outcompete their neighbors. It's like pouring fertilizer on a specific pre-existing weed. It's a promoter, not just a mutagen.
This really changes how we have to think about prevention, doesn't it? It's not just about reducing damage.
It's about trying to control selection and clonal expansion. The big risk factors, sex, smoking, age, they all work by shaping this clonal landscape.
Beyond bladder cancer, the method itself sounds revolutionary. You called it natural saturation mutagenesis. What does that mean for genomics?
It's groundbreaking. I mean, think about it. Instead of going into a lab and trying to manually create every possible mutation in a gene to see what it does.
Which would be incredibly expensive and time-consuming.
Exactly. They just read the results of nature's own massive experiment. Nature has already tested all these mutations for years, in vivo, inside a person. All they had to do was sequence it deep enough to see the outcome.
They're just reading the winners of a decades-long evolutionary race.
Precisely. And they proved it worked. They applied it to TP53, a huge tumor suppressor, and their results, the parts of the gene under selection, they lined up perfectly with what those expensive lab experiments found.
So this is a powerful, direct, and much more efficient way to map the function of driver mutations.
Across the entire human genome, potentially.
So what are the actionable next steps here? Where do we go with this?
Well, the sex bias tells us we need to investigate what's different in the male bladder environment. Is it hormones? Different exposures?
And on the practical side, for patients.
To turn this into preventative medicine, we have to be able to do this non-invasively.
You mean without a tissue brush?
Yes. We need highly accurate methods using things like urine or bladder lavages. If we can detect an expanding TERT clone in a smoker's urine.
We can move from just predicting risk to actually intervening, maybe before it's even cancer.
That's the goal, preemptive intervention.
It's fascinating. So let's wrap this up with the central take-home message.
I think there are two. First, the normal bladder lining is this fiercely competitive evolutionary world. And risk factors like sex and smoking are the referees, deciding which cancer driver clones win and expand.
Long before disease appears.
And second, ultra-deep sequencing of normal tissue is now a revolutionary tool, not just for understanding cancer risk, but for mapping the functional impact of almost any driver mutation in humans.
Which leaves us with a final thought to ponder. What does this mean for preventative medicine if we can non-invasively detect these actively expanding precancerous clones in high-risk individuals, allowing us to intervene before they even cross the threshold into malignancy?
This episode was based on an open access article under the CCBY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now, stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
In the quiet bladder lining, where the hidden rivers run, tiny clones of altered cells mark the work the time has done. Ultra dip, we drop the needle 5,000 layers down, finding drivers in the background of a still and troubled town. Most of them will never blossom into anything we fear, but selection starts in silence long before a tumor's here. You can read it in the pattern of who rises, who stays small, in the choices DNA makes when it's pressed against the wall. Sex stacks the deck, smoke loads the gun, on the normal bladder canvas where the driver clones run. Age flips the switch on TERT, keeps the clocks all overspun. We are living, we are walking, with silent spark smoking guns. And the cremating folds. Yet the map is more than menace, it's a guide to where